cliffcentral.com.
저 배 있죠?
예. Is that it?
Hey, that song,
that I
can't
right
sing. I can't sing along to that song. Do you hear what that song says?
No, help me.
Oksala yosa jola.
Which is?
My friend, if you don't understand that by now, me, I can't help you.
I'm sorry, man. I failed you, haven't I?
You have.
In so many ways. San Fernando, okay, how you doing? It's Frankly Speaking for 1 hour. Thank you to Ben and Mabale. Apparently, Gareth is in the States.
He's in the States, or he might be in transit. Him and a lot of Americans are at the borders right now trying to find safe passage to wherever.
Apparently, the Canadian visa application process online has crashed.
The funniest I heard is that the DRC visa, the DRC immigration website has also crashed.
No, that's not.
Why?
That's not coincidence.
Why?
Who's going to the DRC? Why? Okay.
You see now. Why are you being that guy?
I'm first worldist.
Yeah, why are you being that guy?
I'm first worldist.
Yeah, no, you're being that guy.
All right, so today on the show, we are talking elections. And Rory, you've got something specific to talk about. Here's the best and worst of what's coming.
You've sexually assaulted women. Do you understand that?
No, I didn't say that at all. I don't think you understood what was said. This was locker room talk. I'm not proud of it. I apologize to my family. I apologize to the American people.
You know, with prior Republican nominees for president, I disagreed with them on politics, policies, principles, but I never questioned their fitness to serve. Donald Trump is different. I said starting back in June that he was not fit to be president and commander in chief.
Now, to solve a problem, you have to be able to state what the problem is, or at least say the name. She won't say the name, and President Obama won't say the name. But the name is there. It's radical Islamic terror. And before you solve it, you have to say the name.
This is a gift to ISIS and the terrorists, violent jihadist terrorists. We are not at war with Islam.
She has tremendous hate in her heart. And when she said deplorables, she meant it.
And you never apologize for the racist lie that President Obama was not born in the United States of America. He owes the president an apology. He owes our country an apology. And he needs to take responsibility for his actions and his words.
Yo, so that's what's happening in the U.S. It sounds like Donald Trump is about six electoral college votes from securing the win and becoming the president of the United States of America. Now, obviously, it's got a lot of...
Are you joking?
No, that's exactly how it is. We are on the cusp, on the verge of a Donald Trump presidency in the United States of America.
Oh, we're now five electoral college votes away.
Now, the big thing here is obviously a lot of people are just up in arms. How could this happen? What's going on? Are these people crazy? America has lost its mind. But we thought, you know, frankly speaking, what if these people are the rational ones and we're being the irrational ones? Because we tend to speak about it as if these are irrational people who hunt black people for a living, who, you know, all of these things. But what if these people are rational in their decisions? What is it that we're refusing to see as those of us that call ourselves rational, that we keep labeling them as irrational?
Are so, we the outliers?
Yeah, or we're just in this continued thing of constantly labeling people as irrational, we refuse to actually see what is happening. It happened with Brexit. It's happening now in the United States. Even the pollsters got it wrong. This doesn't fit into any sort of a model that guys have, because models assume irrational behavior, and who decides what rational is, right? So now the question is, in this instance, what is it that we're seeing here that we're refusing to see because we keep labeling it as irrational? What is at the heart of the concerns of the people who are voting for Trump, and what does it mean for the future of the world?
All right, so if you want to join in the conversation, you can hit us up on WeChat at Cliff Central, or you can tweet us your thoughts about this rational world that we think is so irrational, looking at the American elections and the results coming in. It is 5 electoral votes left for Trump to become POTUS, and that will be an incredible, interestingly shit day. You can tweet at Rory Shabalala or at Yebo _ Levy.
Help us.
When reality TV becomes reality, that's when you know you've got a problem. You know, that is everything that is wrong in reality TV is symbolized by Donald Trump. And he is now going to have the keys to nuclear war.
He will never go to nuclear war.
How do you know that?
That guy has properties around the world. Do you think he's going to? He can't run away. You see, he's also in property. You see, if he was in the financial markets, you could say he could flee into a particular stock that is insulated from the war. This guy has property in all parts of the world. He is not going to start a war because then he is unsafe. There isn't a place where he's safe.
You know, it's maybe not only him, but it's, you know, talking about what you were speaking about earlier and what the show's about, it's what is he tapped into in the human psyche of the majority now of Americans that is so, for me, is so scary. You know, we've got rallies in New York, Trump rallies, where we've got Trump supporters screaming, "We hate blacks, we hate Muslims, make America great again." I don't know what song they were, what tune they were singing that to, but I mean, that's the mentality here. And now I'm wondering, you know, are we the irrational ones?
Yeah, well,
has the world gone absolutely bonkers that the irrational are the rational?
It hasn't gone bonkers. It's not about bonkers. These people are thinking straight.
Mm-hmm.
And if we stop, and I think this is what the show is about, is if we stop assuming that these people are bonkers,
are stupid,
we might actually come to the heart of what's really happening, and maybe we can begin to have an influence in that space. Right now, we can't influence the space because we just think it's irrational, and
we don't want to understand it.
Yeah, and we don't want to understand it, and you know, let them eat cake type of a thing. The last person that said let them eat cake, what happened to her? That's what's going to happen to us if we don't begin to engage seriously with what's going on, not just in the United States. In the UK, we saw Brexit, but also in South Africa. When Jacob Zuma gets elected into the office of president, a lot of us put our hands up, you know, people don't think and so on. But that was a big mistake, right? Mm. These people are thinking. They're thinking for themselves, which is what the election is about. They don't have to think about you.
Yeah, of course.
Thinking about themselves. Mm. And they felt that this was the right candidate for them, right? In their rational thoughts. And they might still be happy with him, by the way. Mm. So this thing where we get into our echo chamber and we start speaking as if, no, you see, the whole country doesn't want Jacob Zuma. No, maybe you'd be surprised if you speak to people who he represents.
Yeah.
And interesting, Zuma has said in the past, you know, the people that don't understand democracy are all of us middle class people. We don't understand democracy. We say we do when it works for us.
But
this is democracy. The people have decided that this is who they want as president.
Mm.
We need to shut up because this is democracy.
Mm-hmm.
Don't we say we support democracy and so on?
Well, this is an interesting question that you bring up, Ron. It's not the focus of our show today, but it's interesting how we talk about democracy and everyone's like, oh, yeah, I'm for democracy. Democracy, I think, privileges the capitalist hierarchy. So democracy underpinned by capitalism is a huge, huge problem because there always needs to be a mass of some sort that is completely out of the system. So what is unbelievably ironic is that Donald Trump represents not the masses, but the height of capitalism in America, for me at least. And this is why it's so fascinating. He has tapped into not his own thoughts, but the thoughts of the people. That's what's so brilliant about him. He is brilliant. These aren't his own thoughts. He's a capitalist someone. Capitalist pig. He's a capitalist pig. And but he's tapped into the fear of middle America.
Who is not a capitalist pig? You're a capitalist pig. I'm a capitalist pig. We live in a capitalist society, and our thoughts. You are not sharing. You're not sharing your food with those that don't have. You have relative access in comparison.
Why are you making me that bad guy?
It's like let's not. You know, I'm not a Trump. I'm scared. I am so freaked out by this, but I think we need to face what's happening in the face if we are going to understand it. As Trump said, before you solve it, you gotta say its name.
You gotta name it.
You gotta say its name. If you're gonna solve it, you gotta say its name.
You gotta name
it. So we need to stop saying this is irrationality and bonkers, and we need to say what it is. We need to face it in the face and admit that this is irrational behavior by people, and then understand what we do about it.
Can you introduce our guest and stop talking shit at this show?
So today we thought, because we are 100% clueless on this issue, we thought we'd get a guest in who knows a lot more about this than we do. We've got Mr. Tinashe Chuchu. He is a lecturer in the School of Economics and Business Sciences at the University of the Witwatersrand. For now, we don't know what it's going to be called, with everything that's happening on the campuses. He is also a member of the WITS 2016 US Election Panel of Experts. So he is an expert. We hope he can help us understand what is really going on, because we are too emotional about this. We are labeling people as irrational. Perhaps he understands what the rational stream of thinking is amongst the US electorate. Tinashe, good morning.
Thank you so much for having me, Rory.
Tinashe, help us out, man. First of all, let's just get some context right now. Where are the results sitting at the moment? What proportion of the results have been counted? And what does it take for us to get to a point where a president is elected in the United States?
Okay. Right now, Trump will need...
You got to come a little closer, Tinashe. We want to hear you. There you go. You got to come right onto that mic. There you go.
Okay, you can hear me now.
Yeah, okay.
Okay, right now, Trump only needs about 5 electoral college votes to win the election. And it seems like he's doing well in the Rust Belt. That's where you have Wisconsin and Michigan. And what a lot of people, especially pollsters, didn't see was that these Trump voters didn't just emerge from nowhere. These Trump voters are Obama voters, strange as it may sound. This was a change election. And a lot of people who voted for Trump were the same people who voted for Obama. There are a lot of people who were saying, I voted for change in 08. This year I'm voting for change. Mm. And what also happened was there was a group of voters known as the silent majority. Now, the silent majority is a voice. Mm. We can't blame pollsters for having bad data, because pollsters were relying on what the people were saying. I feel that it was difficult for a lot of people to say, I'm voting for Trump publicly, because the pollster might say, did you hear what he said 2 hours ago? Mm. Did you hear what he said about women? Mm. So a lot of people were known as lean-in voters. It means the person leans in and whispers in your ear to say, I think I'll vote for Trump, but I can't say it. Mm. So many people couldn't say they will vote for Trump, but they wanted change. And we have to be objective. Hillary Clinton was going to be a continuation of the Obama years. Mm. And a lot of people were not happy with the last 4 Obama years. So I find that it shouldn't be shocking that the people who voted for Trump were the same people who voted for Obama. Because if you look at it, Trump took Ohio, Pennsylvania, Florida. He took all 3 major swing states. He only needed to take one of them, but he took all 3 of them. Mm. And if you look at 08, Obama took all 3 of them. In 2012, we took all 3. Mm. So there was no way that you could have won without the Obama voters. Because in a typical election year, we look at maybe 120, 130 million people voting in America. The number didn't change much.
Okay.
But he redrew the map. Mm. The last time Michigan was won by a Republican was in 88, when George Bush Sr. won Michigan. Mm. And Wisconsin was even won a lot earlier than that by a Republican. And if you look at Ohio, the last president to win Ohio was the last Republican also to be president, George Bush.
Mm.
So I think that it's going to require analysts to re-look at how they analyze political data, because it won't make sense to say someone who voted for Obama also voted for Trump.
Yeah.
And I can tell you a stat that will shock you. Do you know that Trump received a larger proportion of the Hispanic vote than Mitt Romney? Mitt Romney received 27% of the Hispanic vote. Trump received 29%. And this is the same guy who people thought he was not even going to get more than 15% of the Hispanic vote.
Mm.
And experts were saying that, look at the Hispanic vote. George Bush got 44% of the Hispanic vote.
Mm.
He was the last Republican to win the White House.
Mm.
And after George Bush, we had John McCain. John McCain had about, he had slightly more, you could say he was in the ballpark of, actually Mitt Romney had about 22, mm-hmm. but John McCain had about 27.
Mm.
John McCain had 27, Mitt Romney had 22. They all lost the election. Trump actually has more Hispanic votes.
He grew the Hispanic vote.
He grew the Hispanic vote.
Wow.
And this is a guy who wants to build a wall.
Yeah. Well, he's probably there saying, look, there are enough of us now. We're here. So let's just build the wall so that these guys don't come in and spoil it for the rest of us.
Exactly. And I can tell you something crazy that he also said regarding Hispanics. There are a lot of things that happen in American politics that are politically incorrect.
Mm.
You can't say that as Republicans, we have to block amnesty.
Mm.
And for listeners who might not be familiar with amnesty in America, to be honest, it was a way of blocking undocumented Mexicans from having a path to citizenship.
Mm.
So what happens is, imagine there are 11 million undocumented Mexicans. 11 million.
Mm.
That's like the size of Gauteng
yeah.
in America.
Yeah.
And you give them amnesty.
Yes. They're now citizens.
Yes. Logic will tell you they'll vote for the Democratic Party.
Yes.
They won't go Republican.
Yeah.
And a lot of Republicans were saying there's no way we'll approve amnesty.
Amnesty, yeah.
And they couldn't say why they wouldn't want to approve it.
Mm.
Because if you have 11 million people voting one way, you can stop being a party.
Yeah.
That's what happened to black voters. The Republicans lost the black voters during the Nixon era.
Mm.
Nixon implemented what's known as the Southern Strategy,
mm.
where you use race to divide people.
Mm.
And all the blacks
went to the Democrats. Yeah.
So now what would happen is potentially all the 11 million Hispanics would probably go Democrat,
yes.
Exactly. And there's no way you can make up for 11 million votes.
Yeah.
So my point is, he actually said that. He said, no amnesty,
mm.
because this would be the last election we can win.
We can win, yes.
He says things that people think.
Yes.
And I was watching one of the debates. I could actually predict what the other candidates were going to say.
Mm.
But with Trump, it's funny. He said what a normal person would say.
Yes.
And in every, he actually never used to use a teleprompter.
Mm.
Everything was off the cuff.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
I think that pollsters, we can't blame them, because voters gave them that information.
Yes.
And they were lying. There's something called a Bradley effect.
Yes.
So in 1982, there was a black candidate for the gubernatorial race in California. And all the white voters, potential voters in California, were saying, we'll vote for Tom Bradley, we'll vote for him.
Mm.
Then when people had to vote, he lost in a landslide.
Wow.
So people thought in 2008 there was going to be a Bradley effect where everyone couldn't say, I won't vote for Obama, because people might think you're racist.
Mm.
But he actually won.
Mm.
The Bradley effect wasn't there. But clearly this time it was there.
It was going to be a Bradley effect in the opposite direction, to be honest. I thought all these Trump voters would be like, yeah, we'll vote for Trump, blah, blah, and then as soon as they get there, vote for Clinton. But cheapest, not the case. So.
Well, I think it's another interesting thing is this divide that exists between us, so I say us who think that we are we hold the monopoly to rationality, and everybody else, and we look like we're in an increasing minority. What is going on in the world, Tinashe? What is it? So if you're saying that Trump said the things that people were actually thinking. What are people actually thinking right now? Are we seeing a class revolt across the world?
There's a class revolt, and you can look at Brexit. So this is a mirror image of Brexit, in my opinion. For instance, the one of the main drivers for the Brexit vote was that a lot of people in the UK felt that the UK was sucking up to the EU. It wasn't taking care of its citizens, and British citizens were being viewed as second-class citizens. Mm. And if you remember, Trump was saying illegal immigrants are treated better than war veterans in America. Mm. So now what happened was, if you look at this, Trump wants to impose a 35% tariff for all imports into the U.S. That will definitely help the U.S. Mm. People inside the U.S. will benefit from that. Mm. But that would be bad for countries that want to do business with the
global
U.S.
Global trade, yeah.
Exactly. Mm. So his protectionist views were very appealing, just like here in South Africa. If it's expensive for companies to do business with us, it means we benefit from that. They wouldn't benefit. Mm. And what people also didn't see was that a lot of people who didn't like Trump were not American. You find the Italian prime minister didn't like him. So many world leaders didn't like him. Mm. And right now in South Africa, everyone is sad right now. Who sent me a message is sending me I usually get smiley faces. Yeah. Today I'm getting sad faces. But all these people, it didn't matter because Americans were the only people who mattered.
Yeah.
And if he's telling you that I'm putting a 35% tariff, it's going to be appealing to Americans. Mm. Because since 1913, it was a 20% tariff. He's spiking it by 15%.
What then happens to American exports? Because obviously what we're going to then see is other countries retaliating with their own protectionist measures.
Brinkmanship on steroids here, right?
Yeah, and there we go with globalization. It's done. We're all in a protectionist world. What does that look like?
I think to analyze this, we're going to need a full day. But I can just say it's countries that are currently doing our business with U.S. might retaliate, because there's no way you can put a 35% tariff and I accept and maybe maintain the same tariff that I have on my side. So I think other countries will try to raise their tariffs, but at the same time, it's all about looking at who has more bargaining power. If South Africa says we want to punish the U.S., that wouldn't work out well, because South Africa needs the U.S.
It's a small market. We're a small market in relation. But does this then not bring us to Andrew's biggest fear? Is that when the economic battles begin, they're going to need to be supported by political battles and political war? Because the U.S., if we decide that we're now going to block U.S. products, for example, and the rest of the world decides to do the same, the U.S. will need to force its way into countries. And the only way that it will be able to force its way into countries then is to take the political route. So are we then not seeing a higher probability of wars happening? Because now the economics don't make sense. We might be a small market, but markets like China and so on are quite big for the U.S.
Yes.
If they decide to shut their borders, if South America decides it's going to shut its borders, what type of an America do we begin to see?
I think we can take a step back a bit, because to be honest, yes, he proposed a 35% tariff, but when we look at a reality, it's not going to be practical, because right now China is America's largest trading bloc, and the EU is also a major trading bloc for the US. Mm. Trump's hand is going to be forced to keep it at 20%. I can give you a good example. When Obama was running for president, one of his biggest talking points was that he's going to close Guantanamo Bay. Right now, Guantanamo Bay is still open. Mm. And true. Guantanamo Bay almost single-handedly destroyed the US image globally. Mm. But you couldn't close Guantanamo Bay. And what Mr. Trump is going to see is that when you get into Washington, you become an insider.
It's a different ballgame.
He's going to be the same person he was fighting against.
Yeah.
Because to be honest, we'll see what will happen. But I can tell you that he's probably not going to get a single vote from House Republicans, because it's not like he can just dictate things in the U.S.
Yeah,
they rely heavily on the balance of power. Mm. So I think he's going to face a lot of resistance.
I think what's interesting in this whole run-up to the vote and now seeing the results is how amazing the, you know, these concepts of bringing or collectivization are in terms of hate. Hate sells. And we've seen that across the whole world. We saw Brexit, there was a whole bunch of hate. We saw, you know, like Trump's rhetoric is all about hate.
But you see, that is what I'm challenging us to do, is we're framing it as hate. But is it really hate? Is there something else? Is there a deeper strand here that for lack of better words, we're just referring to as hate?
Tinashe is, you can see Tinashe is an academic. He's put his hand up. Tinashe, this is a conversation. What do you want to say on this issue? Yeah?
Okay, me being the typical academic. In terms of hate, if you remember Karl Rove, George Bush Jr.'s chief strategist, used what was known as the divide and conquer approach. So if you just put in race, white people go one side, minorities go one side. A lot of people who voted for Trump were working class white Americans. And as a lot of people said, this block is not enough to win the election. Oh, now we see that they are wrong. But they felt that minorities like Hispanics, African Americans, and a few white voters might make up what's known as the Obama coalition. But we can now see that the Trump coalition is bigger than all these minorities put together. So I think when we say hate sells, it actually does. Because
the academic agrees with me.
But it doesn't mean the academic knows everything.
He's been captured.
Oh, he's a state capture.
He's been captured.
Oh, he's a state
fully,
capture.
Fully.
But
fully,
you know, like on a serious point, what I would actually want to say is that I closely followed the election, and a lot of people were saying, I'll vote for Trump because Mexicans are jumping into my farm. Like a lot of people who stay in Arizona, yeah, Texas, these states that border Mexico, were actually saying, we'll vote for him because these guys are jumping into my farm. And I have some American friends who are actually saying that these Mexicans are all over Texas, and poor white Americans compete for the same jobs. Mm. So they were actually saying that we'll vote for Trump. And what also happens is, people were saying Trump is a billionaire. How does he appeal to poor white people? The thing is, poor white people are competing with Mexicans for the same jobs.
Yeah.
And he's saying that I'll chase away 11 million people
so that you can have jobs.
And I'll put a wall on top of that.
Yeah.
So you are so appealing.
But I wonder if that, sorry, Rory, yes, just to say, I wonder if the hate that I spoke about, maybe you're right, maybe there's a reframing here, but the hate talks to a deeper emotion, which is fear. It's the fear of the Mexicans. It's the fear of, you know, in the Cold War, it's the fear of the Russians. It's the fear of the Chinese and the Asian inclusion. It's this fear that then leads people to vote for the devil they know, you know, not the devil they don't know, the devil they know. And Trump has literally played right into that.
And I can add on to that. Speaking about fear, do you know when Trump proposed his Muslim ban, it wasn't just because maybe he doesn't like Muslims or he thinks Muslims are dangerous to the states. What was happening was Ted Cruz had a surge. At the time, Ted Cruz was doing so well.
Mm.
And Trump figured that if he says, I'm going to chase away or ban Muslims from entering the U.S., it's going to be crazy. The media will go crazy. So what actually happened was, one, he got all the attention after he proposed the Muslim ban, and he also tapped into Muslim fear. You know, a lot of people, for some reason, they're afraid of Muslims, for no reason.
Mm, mm.
And he tapped into what regular people think, but they can't say. And it also helped him get attention, because everyone was saying, I condemn this. This is bad. This is the worst type of person. How can you say you want to ban Muslims? But it appealed to a lot of people. And it also removed the spotlight from Ted Cruz, because the only reason why Marco Rubio did a bit well towards the end was that he was now having a personal fight with Trump.
With Trump,
so anyone who wanted attention had to fight Trump and had to sort of respond to what Trump says. And this debate was centered around Trump. You can look at all the debates. He had more speaking time. He was always in the center. And even when he refused to go to one of the debates, his event was competing for airtime.
It's very, you know, for me, it's just very, very interesting because it again raises this idea that we are missing the conversations that really matter in the hearts and minds of people across the world. And clearly, the conversation was, I mean, this is politics, almost politics 101, because you don't come in, if you come in with a very fuzzy message, I've been in politics and I've failed, so I think I have a better sense of how to lose an election.
Why do you like that?
I do. I am an expert at how to lose an election.
It wasn't your fault that
It doesn't matter. I was inside a losing... we lost an election, but... One of the weaknesses was we were very fuzzy. It was very, you know, very big terms and very collectivist. You're trying to appeal to everybody, and you're trying to be nice, and you're trying to follow the lines of virtue.
Mm.
Julius comes in and he says, "I'm creating, first of all, a clear distinction in the mind of voters about who we're going against and who we're for. We're against white monopoly capital and we're for black people who have been marginalized," right? Very clear in the minds of ordinary people what that means. This is what we're fighting for. We're not trying to find a middle ground. This is what we're fighting for. Once elected, we can find a way to trace back our steps and find a middle ground. But in the election, in the heat of the battle, we are very clear about who our enemy is and what our ideals are. And was that the sense? Is that Trump seemed to tap into that? He quickly, you know, anti-Muslim, anti-Mexicans, anti... The fact that he might not do it is another thing, but he's very clear. Whereas the Clinton administration... Like right now, I'm trying to think, what is the big thing that Clinton... promise that she would do.
You won't remember
a thing, but you remember that Trump said he was going to build a wall. You know, we're going to profile Muslims that come in. We're gonna. It's much clearer with Clinton. Right now, I'm sitting here. I followed it. I wasn't as passionate about it as I've been with past elections. But I don't remember a single thing that she said she was going to do.
The thing is, you make a very valid point, because. The way I see it, Clinton was your typical politician.
Mm.
She was the same as Jeb Bush, Marco Rubio, Ted Cruz, all these politicians. They have to say certain things. I can give you a quick example. Mm. I don't know how long this show is. Hillary Clinton said you have to have two positions. One is your public position.
One is your private position. Yes.
And it feeds into negative stereotypes that people have with politicians. Mm. So now with Trump, if he says that I'm going to do A, B, C, and D, he's going to say the exact same thing throughout. Mm. Sometimes it can even make it worse, like the Muslim ban. They say to him, "How are you going to know if someone is a Muslim?" Mm. Then he said on the ID, they have to indicate they are Muslim.
Mm.
And people said, "How is this different from the Holocaust when Jews had to be profiled?" And people thought, "Ah, no, he's gone.
Yeah.
You can't profile people."
Yeah.
But my point is that with politicians, they say a lot of things for political expedience. Like Hillary Clinton used to support NAFTA. A lot of politicians usually support a popular position. There was one time she was against homosexuals when she was a senator.
Mm.
Now she is for gay marriage.
Mm.
So the thing is, a lot of politicians move with opinion.
Yeah.
So now with Trump, he says things that he thinks, I don't know if we can say are right or wrong, but he doesn't go with the general consensus.
Let's just tap into his flip-flopping, because he also flip-flopped.
Yes,
there are a lot of things that he used to support and now he didn't support. How come it was okay for him? It didn't sink him, but it's clearly sunk Hillary Clinton.
Yes.
What is it about him? Is it the fact that popular media then attacked him and turned him into a victim when he said those things? Or in what part of that can the ordinary person relate to?
Okay, I know that's a very good question. I like that question. The first thing was Trump was being assessed using a different standard. Right now, if a politician, does not have a clear foreign policy. That politician is decimated. Mm. But he, if he uses a teleprompter, they say he's presidential. If he doesn't attack someone at 2 in the morning on Twitter, they say he's presidential.
Yeah.
The standards were lower for Trump, to be honest, because reading a teleprompter is standard for someone who's running for president. Yeah. But for him, it was a plus. Not insulting people on Twitter was a plus for him. So if you look at the onset, the media couldn't really put him on the same level as other politicians because they were saying, no, he's an outsider. If he doesn't know much about ISIS, we can give him a pass because he was never privy to intelligence.
Yeah.
So I think that he was able to get away with so many things because they said he's not a politician. He doesn't know these things.
Give him a chance. But why are we going to give him a chance now when, you know, why are we going to trust him? He's not experienced. When experience was such a big part of the previous elections, I remember when Hillary went up against Obama. That was one of Obama's biggest weaknesses.
Yes.
That he's inexperienced. He still won, but it counted a lot against him then.
Yes.
This time, the inexperience of Donald Trump doesn't seem to matter to most of the voters. What happened?
Yes. Can I just tell you a brief history to explain that point? So what happens is when you look at Donald Trump, I think now a lot of people know he's the first president, we might as well call him president, without military experience, political experience, or any government experience at all. So I just had to take that outside. And the only other person who didn't have political experience was Eisenhower. But Eisenhower can say, I won the World War.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that's significant. It was a general who became president. So my point is, how do we trust someone without any experience at all?
Yeah.
That's a good question. And when you look at people, one thing that worked in his favor was that he is a successful business. Mm. But now when you run a business, there are certain things that you can dictate.
Yes.
And when you run a country, there's a lot of compromise. Obama, the reason why he couldn't achieve as much as he wanted, he had to compromise. Mm. So I have a feeling that Trump might face serious gridlock. And I can give you a good example. Let's say he wants to build a wall. That wall right now is going to need $25 billion. If you put it in rand, it's in the trillions. Mm. And the U.S. is that kind of man. They do have $25 billion to build a wall. And to put it in context, it's 200 miles, which is 400 kilometers. 400 kilometers
of wall that must still be maintained after that.
Exactly. Yeah. And they can do, the US government can afford to pay that for that, and there are people who voted for him because he said he was going to build a wall. Building a wall doesn't require political experience. It doesn't require military experience.
It requires construction experience.
And he's a construction man. So just to be quick on the point, I just wanted to say, you said we'll build a wall, but I don't see that wall happening because when 80 people were shot in the Orlando nightclub, the Democrats wanted to take it to a vote. Do you know they couldn't even take it to the Senate to say, can't we discuss ways of addressing gun violence? They couldn't even take it to the Senate when 80 people were killed. How will a wall be approved?
But Tinashe, that was in an instance where the president is Democrat and Congress is Republican.
Yes.
In this instance, are we not now seeing a Republican president with a Republican Congress?
And a Republican Senate.
And a Republican Senate as well. So things can be quickly done, no?
Yes. They can.
Wow.
So if you just joined the conversation, we are speaking on the Tuesday voting, the Wednesday, the day after the vote when the results come through. We're asking, frankly speaking, are Trump voters acting rationally? Just to let you know, as we've been speaking, guys, the New York Times has just announced that Donald Trump is the new president of the United States of America. It is unbelievable. It is absolute nonsense what's happening here.
Tico
wants to go George Goh. We thought we had problems with Zuma. There is no problems. There are no problems. Let me tell you something. It is a brilliant day that half or more than half of America do not know where South Africa is. They think it's in Australia. That's great news for us. That is great news for us. You know, I wanted to ask you something, Rory. We're quickly coming to the end of the show, but I wanted to ask you something. Because of your experience as a, what you call it, I'm going to be a retired politician, you'll say a failed politician. Let's not use such harsh language for you, my friend. A retired politician. And I saw, you know, I was a big supporter. I even had the shirt that you gave to me that you said I must wear. But I watched your debates when you were debating against other politicians, and you always, you know, you did the Michelle Obama thing. When they go low, we go high. You always took the moral high ground. It didn't work, right? It hasn't worked here again in the American election. It didn't work for the Brexit thing. This moral high ground, you know, we will say what we can actually do and not just say anything that gets us the votes. Mm. On reflection, do you think, because now...
You can't eat moral high ground. Full stop.
But what does that mean?
You can't eat moral high ground. You tell me you're going to give me land.
So this is a learning from your experience.
Yeah. So you can, I think it's about how do you couch moral high ground in the things that people really care about, right? But you can't sell me a virtue. I can't eat it. I can't give me something. So I remember we were in Alexandra one day and our leader was going on about, you know, you've been lied to, you've been told, people have promised you things. We're not going to do that. We're a different type of a political party. We are not going to lie to you and make empty promises. What we're going to do is work with you to solve your problems. Mm. Right. A lady put up her hand and said, are you going to build me a house or not?
The leader
replied and said, no, didn't you hear what I said? I said, look, promises have been made to you that weren't fulfilled. I don't want to make that promise to you right now and be unable to fulfill it. What I want to do is I want to work with you. I want us to work together to solve the problems that you and your neighbors have so that we build an amazing community for you and so on. She put up her hand again and she said, does that mean you're going to build me a house or you're not going to build me a house? That's when our leader flipped. We're like, do you not hear me?
But isn't that the point, right?
So that's the thing.
Isn't that the point that you know, we're talking about these rational people and we're going, these Trump voters, they're irrational. But they're not. They've got certain needs. They've got certain wants. They've got certain desires that they have. And yet you didn't speak to them as a retired politician.
It says a lot about Maslow's hierarchy of needs, right? It's perhaps that those that are able to tap into the lower levels of the hierarchy of needs. So it probably takes you have to reach self-actualization to want to be president, probably. That's probably what it gets to, is you have to be at a level of self-actualization. You've serviced all of the different needs. You're now at self-actualization. You want to make broad impact happen, right? But you don't succeed at that by appealing to self-actualization ideals. You then need to go back and say, what is a person who is on those lower levels of need? What is it that defines what their lives look like? The interesting thing is that, for example, Julius Malema started appealing to those lower levels and is increasingly seeing himself getting support from even those that are on the higher levels of the hierarchy of needs. So there's a very interesting thing here about being able to tap into what people are, and to name it. I think if we could take any advice from Trump about how to win an election, is before you solve it, you got to say it by name. And that's what he was good at. He was good at saying, it's a wall. I'm going to build a wall. Everybody understands what a wall is. And there's no ambiguity about what a wall is, right? We're not going to speak about integrity because there's 10 different definitions of integrity. We're not going to speak about whatever political ideals and so on, because there's 10 different versions. A wall is a wall. Saying no to Muslims is saying no to Muslims. That's just how it is. And that's perhaps what people are craving, is, you know, tell it to me like it is. And maybe perhaps stop assuming that I'm more intelligent in terms of the typical definition of intelligence and so on. Is I'm a simple person. I want simple things. Give it to me and tell me what you're going to do for me.
Dinesh.
Well said. Well said.
That's why he's a politician. And listen, WeChat, we've been getting quite a few messages. Palesa saying, I'm finding it hard to reconcile that voters that voted for Obama are the same ones that voted for Trump. Wait, are their policies the same or related? I tried looking for what Trump's policies are, but I couldn't find anything solid. I mean, why did Americans go to that extreme? I'm in disbelief.
Tinashe.
Okay. All right. The thing is, the voters that voted for Obama were change voters. Trump was a change candidate. So regardless of those voters being, at that time, they voted Democrat. So what actually happened now was those people who voted for Obama, a lot of them were not necessarily Democrats at the time. They were independent. That's how you win a U.S. election. Mm. Because that country is so divided. It's almost 40-40. And the victor is solely, okay, or you could say to win the election, you solely depend on independent voters. Mm. Because it's almost 40-40. Mm. So what happened was Obama won because so many independent voters were angry at Bush. They were angry at the Republican Party. And these independent voters just switched. Mm. So those people were not Democrats to begin with. They were independent. Mm. Those are the same independent voters who didn't, they were not married to Obama. They didn't have any commitment to
him. Yes, and they're not married to a party. They're married to this thing of change.
Exactly. Mm. That's why we can say the Trump voters are also the Obama voters.
Jeez.
Yes.
Andrew, I think we should thrust ourselves into history and declare the race.
the race is over. And Donald Trump has officially won. Oh, you want to put us in the race?
No, let's declare it.
Oh, go declare ahead. It. Okay, so
be the voice that declares.
Ladies and gentlemen, Donald J. Trump has officially won the U.S. elections. He is giving his his acceptance speech. As we speak in New York right now, and I mean. What is interesting, just quickly before we go, because we are running out of time, is the only thing that I've heard throughout this campaign about Africa from Donald Trump, because like Americans don't care about Africa at this point in time. It's not on their radar, even though there are a huge amount of Africans living in America, is that he wanted to put Robert Mugabe in jail. Has there been any other African policies that he's spoken about, or are we literally going to be the dark continent for America for the next 4 years?
I think, to be honest, Africa is probably going to be the darkest continent, because as far as he's concerned, I don't see how Africans benefit him. Because if you look, I'm not saying all the people in Africa didn't like him, but I can't remember talking to anyone who was in favor of Trump, regardless of race, religion. And he probably knows that I did it by myself. No Africans, no world leaders. And all these world leaders were condemning him. African leaders didn't really like him.
Except for Putin.
Putin liked him, which is weird. Because
which now makes it very interesting.
Reagan is turning in his grave right now. Just imagine.
I want us to just bring it home a bit, because I'm curious about what this says about our local politics. Are we seeing the possibility of President Julius Malema in 2019? If this trend is something that we can project across the whole globe and say, you know, class revolts, people want change. Are we seeing, the ANC is falling apart. Could we have President Julius Malema in 2019?
I'll try to be quick because of time. To be honest, if he can take a sizable chunk of ANC supporters, he's the next president. But these are revolution struggle parties. ANC is not a party. It's not breakfast where you can just eat up and finish. It's going to take decades or even longer. So the honest truth is, if he can appeal to ANC people, then he's the next president. But it's not easy taking out a party that brought independence. Across Africa, revolution parties, you just don't remove them.
Yeah, they're deeply rooted. Yes. Are you from Zim?
Yes.
So you know something about this. people have
Why
come
are you putting
in
me on the mark now?
No, but people have come in and said change. The man is still there. He's still there. He's sitting pretty. Is that a similar experience? You're saying in Africa, look at America, have fun. It's entertainment. It's reality TV. But come back home. Ain't gonna happen here.
In Zim, I can't comment.
What?
I don't have any comments about Zim.
That's a lie. You're being an academic. This is Cliff Central. uncensored, unradio.
No, he doesn't want to get killed or jailed, Rory. I mean, come on, like honestly, comments regarding Zimbabwe. Yeah. You see, he knows.
But what does this then say about what the next election, the big theme around South African elections is going to be, and how best to tap into what people are thinking? Because I think that, you know, if we are to draw parallels, yes, we're not the same country, we're not in the same, they're very different things at play here, but you do get a lot of that same sense around, you know, even with this thing of we're going to stand up for Pravin Gordhan and so on, you see that, you know, the one side, so there were two marches on that day. You had Save SA, and then you had Julius Malema, and it just felt like Julius, the EFF, had more popular opinion than Save SA. It's sort of they're appealing to two very different people, and most of the middle class, or at least a lot of the middle class, are increasingly becoming are increasingly opening their hearts up to the EFF. Yes. Is that what's going to happen now? Is that the message that's going to drive the future and the shape of South African politics moving forward?
I think you're spot on. And speaking closer to home, I can quickly speak about Wits, where I'm from. These students can just determine the next president. So if they don't get free fees in the next election cycle, that's it for ANC. That's what I think.
But they're middle class. They're still not. The students on campuses are middle class. Even if they say they're appealing for the poorest of the poor, they're still middle class students. Do you think that what their sentiment mirrors what the sentiment of the blue collar and rural voters are?
I know. The thing is, they are middle class. They are middle class, but they also appeal to a larger block. For instance, right now, maybe we can say it started at Wits. We thought that maybe this movement would just end at Wits, but it affected the whole country. And it will just also influence more people. So I think if there's no free education in the next election cycle, that's it. These universities will be closed like a store. They'll just close them up.
Yo, Andrew, I can see you're just...
You are
dumbstruck. What's wrong, my friend? Tell me what you're feeling. Let me pull an Andrew. Andrew, what are you feeling?
Oh, don't do that.
What are you feeling? Tell me what you're feeling.
That's nonsense.
No, what are you feeling? Nonsense is in the head. What are you feeling in the heart?
No, what I'm feeling is I'm feeling like I think one of the biggest issues is the system that we face. And Donald Trump speaks to breaking of that system.
Andrew, what are you feeling?
No, I'm
your
telling
heart.
You,
what's
to,
going
listen,
on in your
just
heart?
Just wait, just wait. So I'm feeling like there's parts of me that are going, oh my God, I can't believe that the most powerful nation in the world. I mean, I don't care what you say, right? It doesn't matter whether you believe it or not. They are the most influential nation in the world by far, right? At this point in time, has just elected a guy that was on The Apprentice and said, you're fired. Wrong. You know, like so that's what's going in my...
This is the same country that voted for Arnold Schwarzenegger to be a governor. So
well, exactly. Hey. So something is broken. That's what I'm feeling. Something is broken. We herald celebrity opinions as the most important. We see like those kind of people as like amazing. And then we're surprised when Donald Trump, who is a celebrity in himself, has been elected as the president of the country. There you go. Something
Tinashe's
is broken.
Hand. Okay. Tinashe's hand pops up.
That's a beautiful hand. You don't have to have a hand.
I had to. Okay, the thing is, your point is very powerful. When you said this is someone who did The Apprentice, do you know during The Apprentice, people actually respected him because he had his boardroom.
Then
people were fighting to work for him.
Yes.
He was actually respected during that time. But you can say he's the Access Hollywood Donald Trump. That is crazy.
Yeah.
If it's the Donald Trump Apprentice, it's even better because he was actually respectable.
Yes.
People wanted to work for him.
Yes.
But the Access Hollywood Donald Trump
is a very different Donald Trump. Hey, we're going to have
to
wrap
feeling?
This up.
What are you feeling right now?
I don't know, Chief. I am
you do know.
I'm a black man in the southern tip of Africa, and Donald doesn't give a hoot about me. So me, I'm just here and I'm just like, hey, let's see. This is going to be very interesting. I don't know what we're going to see, if they're going to be renewed U.S.-Russian relations. That's going to be very interesting to watch. How does China fit into all of this? Because they've clearly been labeled as the enemy in the U.S.
How does Europe feel about this?
Europe
I'll
right
tell
now.
You why, I'll tell you why. Because think about this, right? If Putin and America, if Russia and America make good relations, right, and are then suddenly on the same side, they will wipe Europe.
No, but Trump has too many interests in Europe. So he might use that relationship actually to get Putin to calm down. We don't know. We'd have no idea what's going on. But I think the big lesson for us, those of us that think we're rational, especially those of us in the middle class, is I think it says a lot about how we engage with what's happening in our society. And we need to get off our high horses and stop looking at the world as though our thoughts are universal. This is something that I think permeates across the rest of society. What does it say?
Tinash, thank you. Thank you for coming in.
Thank
Tinash
you for
Chuchu
having me.
Thank you so much,
Vitz,
brother.
The Vitz Economics Department. Can we get you on Twitter? What's your Twitter address? Do you have a Twitter address?
Tinash at Tinash Chuchu 1.
Was Chuchu 0 taken?
Sorry?
Was Chuchu 0 taken? Tinash Chuchu 0 taken.
That's what Twitter gave me.
Pincham, let's get out of here. I want to wish Jolene John a happy birthday, friend of mine.
What is this? Are you getting paid per clicks or something?
I'm just worried. She will forever remember her birthday. She will forever remember her birthday as the day that Donald Trump was elected president.
Absolute nonsense. It's a fiasco. Ciao. CliffCentral.com.